There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. Real time.
And William Mullally is with us, our film critic for The Ticket. Hello.
Hello.
You've just flown in to do a little special with us before flying back out to Barcelona to chat to some more celebrities. Who are you going to see next?
Claire Foy, for an upcoming film coming out this fall. Really looking forward to it.
You know her
from The Crown, of course, on Netflix.
I love her so much. To me, she's better than the Queen. She's amazing, isn't she?
Yeah, plus she's got a Doctor Who with her. It's a pretty good combo.
Yeah. Really cool. So that's exciting. Have you got penned down what you're going to ask yet?
No, not yet.
When do you think about that?
About 5 minutes before I go in.
You liar.
Seriously.
You definitely do not do that.
That's what I do. Otherwise, I overthink it.
Really?
Yeah.
And where do you go with your questioning? Like, do you stalk her on social media first?
Well, I know as much as possible. So I watch pretty much everything they've ever done. I watch a lot of interviews with them, so I have a good sense of them.
Yeah. Then that's important, isn't it? Watching interviews with them to see what kind of interviewee they are. I always think that's really important.
Yeah. You got to know which is going to fall flat completely.
From everything you know about her, is there a question you already know that you need to ask?
No, actually. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
If anyone's got any questions for Claire Foy, feel free to text them in. William has a sheet with nothing on it right now. What would I ask Claire Foy? I think I would ask her how she feels about the royal family now and how she felt about them before. Because I'm sure, like all of us, not everybody knew the story. And I know it's not actually like factual, the story in The Crown. But I mean, it's pretty close in places, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite Queen fact recently is that every time the Queen hears Dancing Queen, she has to dance to it because she loves to dance and she's the Queen.
That's amazing. I hope that's true. Some messages coming in. Going to the movies alone. Adam says, I prefer to go to the movies alone. Not only that, I always go in the morning on a weekday when the theatre is likely to be at its most empty. That way I can enjoy the movie rather than listen to other people comment on the movie. How do you feel about going to the cinema alone?
I think it's great. Absolutely. I can focus more a lot of times. And that way, a lot of times, especially when the film festival was here, I would go to 4 movies a day and no one was looking at me like, why are you dragging me to 4 movies today? I could just enjoy it on my own, completely indulge in the cinematic process. I love it.
What about you, Sonal?
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't even understand why this is an issue. I think it's so much fun to do things alone. You should be able to do whatever you want alone. And watching a movie, like you said, it's great. You don't have to worry about having the same taste as someone else. It's liberating.
I felt like it was liberating. I remember the first time I did it, I was on holiday on my own in New York and it was raining. I was like, what am I going to do? And I found this really cool little art house cinema. Sunshine Cinema?
Yeah.
You know that one?
I believe it's closed now.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
And I went to see Senna in there on my own. And I can even remember, like, before the film came on, the Wombats were playing in the theatre. And it was just a real experience being on my own, having to take in everything around me.
Mm.
It's different. I love it.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. And restaurants alone as well, for sure.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I'll bring an iPad, watch a movie there, bring my headphones. It's another solo movie experience.
No, you can't watch movies in a restaurant.
Too weird? I've done it.
It's not too weird. It's kind of like you're bringing down the tone of the restaurant.
I guess it depends what kind of restaurant.
McDonald's, maybe, but not in a really nice restaurant.
Especially those are the people who aren't going to bug you.
No, you need to take a book into a really nice restaurant, not a movie. Okay. Like, movie, trashy. Book, educated young man traveling alone. That's what I would see with those two things.
Well, can you go into a restaurant without an assist and just go sit there and eat? No book, no movie, just eat by yourself.
I can do that, but I'd have to have a book to pretend that I was reading next to me. I did it once in Paris, actually. Went out for dinner and it was this little restaurant that only had 6 tables in it. And it was amazing. This has never happened to me before, or will again, now that I'm a bit older and chubbier. But I was eating my dinner and the guy comes over, the waiter, and he tapped me on the shoulder and he went, excuse me, are you a famous tennis player? I was like, yes, I am. No, I didn't really.
Oh, you should have.
John says, I love going to the movies alone. That is my preferred method, preferably in the middle of the day when no one's there. What is with no one being in the movies that people like?
Oh, that's so good. One time I showed up and no one had bought tickets to that movie. It had already started. And so they started the movie just for me. I felt like a movie king.
Whoa.
You were literally the only person sat there.
Yes, that's this was incredible. My movie.
Karen's taking a different take on this. Almost everything in life is more fun with a friend. There is nothing wrong with going to the movies alone, especially if it's during the day. But whilst the activity in hand itself is devoid of interpersonal communication, the activity of visiting a theatre and experiencing everything is better with at least one other person. I guess if you see it alone, then you don't have anyone to talk to afterwards about how good the film was.
Jamal has also said, my brother always goes to the cinema alone. He simply wants to focus on the movie. And I sometimes do it when it's a horror movie, since most of my friends refuse to go with me.
Yeah, I've had to do that at horror movies as well, Jamal. I go to the movies alone only when my wife does not want to watch what I want. And not want to want to watch what I want is in capital letters on that text. Shout at the end bit. Wow.
Seems like a lot of people are agreeing that it's great to go alone. Rania has also said, love to go alone to the movies. I get to choose my favorite movie, my favorite effects such as action, 4D, and other favorites that my friends don't like. I sound awkward to some friends, but I still go alone and enjoy it to the max.
Isn't that funny? Do you think most people are going alone then?
No.
I don't. Out of six messages there, five people like to go alone.
We're bringing them out of the woodwork, I think. I think this is something that people feel the need to scream from the rooftops. They've had to keep it in secret all along.
All right, keep your texts coming in on that. Do you prefer to go to the movies alone or do you like to go with someone? In other movie news, William, speaking of horror movies, there's a new one in the planning.
There is, by one of my favorite directors, Brian De Palma, who has done so many amazing films and is no stranger to controversy as well. He was one of the big villains of the second wave feminist movement with films like Dress to Kill with Michael Caine, Body Double, just really fantastic, but also questionable and at times, you know, very common films. He is going to be adapting something from the Me Too movement. He's going to be basing a film loosely, not by name, on Harvey Weinstein and the scandal. He's going to be setting it at a film festival and having this awful Harvey Weinstein-esque character prey upon these young actresses.
I don't think I like this.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there are many stories to tell in the Me Too movement. Always telling the guy story is the one that we should concentrate on. But it does feel like a Brian De Palma movie. And as a film fan, I'm just happy that Brian De Palma is doing something again, because he hasn't really done much, I mean, in the last 20 years. And he's such an amazing filmmaker. But at the same time, I do want to hear more women's voices on this subject, because those are the ones that matter.
I kind of don't like that it's a horror movie, that they're calling it a horror movie, because I think that kind of takes it out of reality. Whereas if they had made a thriller or a drama or something like that, you know, it feels a little bit more real.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too.
Let's see how it plays out. I think Brian De Palma might turn in something interesting.
A couple more text messages coming in. I love going to movies alone. You can concentrate on the intricacies of it all. And then Christian said, watching a film in a dark room where you're not supposed to have a conversation is an alone activity by essence, whether you're alone or with someone. Yeah, no talking during the movie if you are with someone.
There are people who have done, there's actually a director who sat in the theater and did his own commentary and released it online while the movie was still in theaters, just so you could go see it twice.
Oh, I wouldn't like to be sat next to him, not at all. Adil says it depends upon the movie, action and comedy, mostly with friends. Drama, story art movies I prefer to watch alone.
One listener has actually said exclusively alone, so this person won't even go with someone else.
Wow. I think a movie like the one we're going to be talking about when we come back, I think that's one that you want to see with a group of friends.
Yeah, because you need to make fun of it.
Yeah, definitely. Finally, in movie news, by the way, Gary Rhodes, it's an experience. Do you know what? I'm scared to say something now, because before we got started with this, I handed this to William and he went, oh, you might just want to be careful with. And then he went, doesn't matter. I'm like, what? And he went, no, I love it when you mess up on air. So now I'm really scared about what I've written down.
This one's fine. You'll be okay, I promise.
Okay. So finally, Theatre by Gary Rhodes is coming. It's opening at Murdoch City Centre. A lot of media types have already been down there for a sneak peek. And a lot of people are going along for a taster tonight. I'm hearing very good things. It's very different to the one at Mall of the Emirates, which have you been to yet?
I have been to it. I would rather just stick to, you know, your 35 dirham seat. I'm only going to pay more for a ticket if I'm sitting on the balcony at IMAX. I want the movie to be better, not the food.
So the food doesn't interest you whatsoever?
Not at all.
Ah, okay. See, I quite like the idea of having good food in the movies.
So for me, even getting popcorn is a luxury, because growing up, my mother wouldn't let me get popcorn. She made us bring popcorn from home, and it was always cold by the time we got there.
That's so tragic.
That is tragic, isn't it? But cute. They've turned the plushness up a notch by the sounds of it in this particular cinema. I always remember, near there in Murdiff, there's a little mall as you head down towards Mushroof Park. Mushroof Park's on the right, and on the left-hand side, there was a shopping centre, and it had a cinema in there. And they would bring sushi into the cinema, but it was all wrapped in plastic bags. So the noise of trying to unwrap the plastic bags to get the sushi out.
That also seems like it would be difficult to eat in the dark.
It's actually not that difficult to eat in the dark. It's good. It was fine. I managed that, but it was just the noise of getting it open. But it got me thinking, which is your favourite cinema and why?
Yeah, it's the IMAX screen at Mall of the Emirates. When it's a good movie, though, I mean, the problem with IMAX movies is they're mostly just, you know, nothing movies. But when you get a good one, when you get something like Blade Runner and that kind of screen, there's nothing that compares to that.
What about you?
I'm going to go with Mall of the Emirates too, but because I like the food options there.
Like the cafes outside?
Yeah, exactly.
I like the Roxy in Box Park because it's right opposite where I live. It's too expensive to go all the time. It's really, like, I think it's about 125 dirhams for a ticket, so I can't afford that for every movie. But it's a really small cinema, so it's only got maybe 14 seats in.
On a weekend.
What do you get for the 125? Why is it so much more?
Because it's just like a little boutique-y cinema. So you don't get any more, really. Just nice little seats and a blanket.
I love that. Yeah, on a Friday morning, I always like to go to Real Cinemas in Marina because there's no one ever there. And it is just these gigantic, comfortable seats. There's like 10 seats in the theater. It's amazing. It's the best.
Do you have a favorite theater? Let us know. Real time. William Mullally is the Ticket's film critic, and he's come back again. He's agreed to, which is fantastic, to talk about The Big Movie, which is out this week. I did not see this coming, actually. Kind of dropped on me. I haven't heard much hype about it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they were kind of playing this one a bit close for a movie that made, you know, $1.6 billion internationally, a sequel to. And, you know, it's actually the fifth and probably one of the biggest movie franchises of the last 30 years. And that is Jurassic World is coming back here with The Fallen Kingdom.
Who's excited?
I feel so excited about it. But it's not like, oh, I can't wait. Are you?
Love it. I think because I was the right age when the first Jurassic Park came out. Like, I'm invested in this franchise.
Yeah, and I do think that's why the first one, or the first sequel, or the fourth sequel, whatever, Jurassic World was so successful, is because it captured that feeling that people had. They wanted to relive 1993 and what they felt like then and how much they loved that movie and how big of a spectacle it felt like. And it was very much a rehash of that. And even though it wasn't a very good movie on any counts, it went, you know, everywhere in the world, just nonstop selling out theaters worldwide. And I really am curious to see if nostalgia is going to be enough to bring people back for a second.
Dinosaurs is going to be enough to bring people back for a second.
Really?
Everybody loves dinosaurs. Find me one person that doesn't love dinosaurs.
I mean, I'm wearing a dinosaur on my shirt right now.
Deep down, you love dinosaurs. Tell the truth.
Yeah, for sure. I do like a good dinosaur. And I love Jurassic Park. But that doesn't mean that I need to see this movie over and over again.
It's a different movie.
Is it?
Let's listen to the trailer.
She's tracked. Okay, come on.
Okay. Are you okay?
I'm okay.
How many can you save?
11 species. Blue is the last of her kind.
You'll never capture her.
We thought you might know someone who could help.
A rescue op? What could go wrong?
Hey, Blue. You know me.
Come with me. You know you can't stay here.
It was all a lie!
The man who proved raptors can follow orders.
You never thought how many millions a trained predator might be worth?
They're gonna sell them.
Not Blue. They need it for something else.
What is that thing?
They made it.
This is the most dangerous creature that ever walked the earth.
I say we shut this whole thing down.
Genetic power has now been unleashed.
You can't put it back in the box.
I'll be all right.
These creatures were here before us. And if we're not careful, they're gonna be here after. Welcome to Jurassic World.
Welcome to Jurassic World. Oh, it sends chills through you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and they really pitched Jeff Goldblum, who was the star as Dr. Ian Malcolm in the first one, as well as the second film, and also had Vince Vaughn back in 97. And he's here, and I watched this movie thinking, oh man, it's going to be, he's finally back, he's going to go back with the dinosaurs. He's in it for 30 seconds. He was on that set, I'm sure, for 3 hours tops.
So you saw it last night?
2 nights ago.
Okay.
I did, yeah. And I did see it on IMAX. I did see it on the balcony. So I was in my favorite little spot to watch a big movie like this.
Was the cinema full?
Yes, absolutely. Packed.
What was the feeling in the cinema? There were?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love going to see a film like that.
Yeah, so it definitely has that vibe. So I do think that people were very excited by it. Everyone I talked to actually really enjoyed this one a lot more than the last one. So I do think that, even though I do think this trailer undersells the film, it does feel like, why am I watching this again? I do think the movie delivers. So if you liked the last one, or if you didn't so much like the last one, then you will probably enjoy this one. But there is things to talk about here, because I don't think this is a perfect movie by any right.
Why?
Well, one is just... franchise fatigue, man. This is the fifth time we've done this. And although we're not back in the park, so the story here is obviously the last one is basically a remake of the first one. Look, it's a park. We're going to have dinosaurs. Oh no, the dinosaurs are going to eat us. And then everyone runs away and then the dinosaurs take over the island. Here, a volcano is going to wipe out all of the dinosaurs. So the people that used to work on it here, Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt, have decided that they need to go back and save the dinosaurs and bring them with the help of the guy who originally paid for the park in the first place.
Get them off the island.
Let's get them off the island, yes. And so you feel like this is going to be a film where you're there on the island, you know, helping save them while volcanoes and, you know, lava are spewing down. Spoiler alert, that's actually not most of the movie. Most of the movie is what happens after they get back off the island, which is in really none of the trailers, which really caught me by surprise.
How did you feel about the visualization of this one? Because I read actually that they used more animatronic dinosaurs versus CGI that they did more in the previous one. Could you tell the difference?
Yeah, I do think that that's part of what made the original Jurassic Park so impactful is the fact that these dinosaurs felt real. And when they did use CGI, it was always very sparingly. So even though it was 1993, you still felt like those dinosaurs are real at all times. And one of the things that Steven Spielberg does best is that he captures the feeling of awe. I think as a director, that's one of the things he does best. That's why Close Encounters of the Third Kind is one of his best films. And Colin Trevorrow, who directed the last one, just couldn't really do that. So even though he's had lots of CGI dinosaurs and big action set pieces and people are running around and Bryce Dallas Howard is wearing high heels for some reason in the jungle, the fact that this one, J.A. Bayona, the director who also did The Impossible, who also did a Spanish movie called The Orphanage, which is one of the best horror movies of the last 20 years. It's fantastic. He has a very visual ability to capture these dinosaurs and slow down the pace when he needs to. So sometimes you can just watch them and just feel how breathtaking it is to imagine what if dinosaurs were real. And that's why I think this movie is a lot more impactful than the last one, even when they're switching back and forth between animatronic and CGI dinosaurs.
Something else that's always good in these movies is the music score.
Yeah, but this didn't have, you know, the classic John. They didn't rehash the same John Williams theme.
They didn't?
Not over and over again, which I think is to their credit. You know, there are certain times when you know they just wanted to go for it.
You don't love this?
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Like, it gives me chills when I hear that music. That's not in it.
It's actually my life hack. If I ever get any song stuck on my head, so if I'm, you know, Mi Gente is playing in my head at 3 a.m, I'll just sing myself the Jurassic Park theme and it'll get any other song out of my head. It is that powerful.
Do you have a song hack, Sonal?
I'm afraid I don't, but maybe I'll try that one.
Try it. It works. I promise.
Wow. What William is giving away, you don't even see on the trailer. I don't think you've spoiled that by saying a lot of the film happens after.
I did. I can tell you what you see after.
No.
Fahad has also said, I had the Jurassic Park 1 poster on the wall growing up with the Ford Explorer on it, and I bought a Ford just because years later.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Is there brands in there that are really noticeable? Is it very sponsored, this one?
Yeah, man. Rolls Royce. There's so many Rolls Royces. Those guys are throwing out our money. Not one Cullinan, though. So I guess they weren't up on.
Not one what?
And in the news.
Oh.
Yes, the SUV.
That's how in touch I am. No Fords?
not so much. But I do think that here the focus is a lot more on the dinosaurs than the brands that are being pushed, which I did find welcome because the last one did feel like there were some really embarrassing product placement moments.
Keep your text messages coming in. Let us know if you are excited about the new Jurassic Park, Jurassic World movie. We're going to be talking about some of the characters that are in it when we come back. I did not realise who Claire's dad was until the other day. Now I feel like such an idiot. Also keep your messages coming in on your favourite cinemas in Dubai. Zunib says, my favourite cinema has to be Real Cinemas Dubai Mall. I love the ambience over there, especially at late night shows. Yeah, it's good. It's got a good buzz, that one. I like it too. Used to be my local. All right, we'll be back with more on Jurassic World.
Real time. Real time.
And William Mullally, the Tickets film critic, is here as well. A few text messages coming in, one from Saqib, who has sparked a bit of a debate in the studio. Saqib said on 4001, people still like dinosaurs and Avengers movies. I would love to see more sequels of something like Avatar movies. And I was like, no, Saqib, this is not on. And then I thought, do you know what? There should be a new rule. No sequels, no prequels. You get to make one movie about a thing, you get it all in, or you leave it.
So you want the 80s back?
Let's vote now. No sequels, no prequels.
But trilogies are okay. Things that were meant to always be.
No.
What about like Lord of the Rings?
Make it longer.
Star Wars. You can't have only one Star Wars.
Make it a bit longer. One. Vote now.
She's the boss here. She runs the movies.
I don't like this rule.
No sequels, no prequels. We in? We in? Come on.
There should be a council. I think. An approval council. A fan council. Whether or not a movie needs a sequel or not.
So it shouldn't be black and white. It should be take every movie on its own merits and decide whether it can have a prequel or a sequel as we go.
We should go. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay, because for instance, if we were doing that rule, then I would say Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman?
I would like a sequel.
Really? What do you want to happen in Pretty Woman 2? Pitch it to me.
I don't know. I want Richard Gere to look exactly the same.
Okay, so.
And I want to know that they're still together and happy. Maybe they're living. Maybe we mix the movies. Maybe they're now living at the Marigold Hotel.
Okay. But what's the conflict here?
There isn't any. It's just lovely. It's a lovely ending, and then it ends.
That's why we don't let you write movies. Just watching them hold hands, looking off in the sunset for 3 hours.
That would be great. That sounds a little bit like Forever Young. Remember that movie?
I don't.
You do. Mel Gibson when he got frozen.
That's probably why I don't remember it. It sounds boring.
Oh, I don't know if we can have a film critic that's never seen Forever Young. Have you seen
that? I have definitely never seen this. What do you mean? He gets frozen.
Mel Gibson gets frozen and then wakes up like miles in the future?
I think you need to let it go. You see what I did there?
Nice.
I like it. Well, letting it go then and moving back on to Jurassic World. Fallen Kingdom, it is now out. William's already seen it. I don't think he gave away much of a spoiler. Shruti did very shouting text message saying, thanks for the spoiler, William. I don't think you spoil anything.
Yeah, there is an ending as well. There's a plot that happens. Some bad things happen.
Let's talk about some of the people that are in the movie, because they are the people who were in the last movie. Bryce Dallas Howard.
Mm-hmm.
She's awesome. I did not realize who her dad is.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you.
You're going to tell me you know So Happy Days now, aren't you?
Is it the Fonz?
Yeah.
Is it Chachi?
Yeah.
Is it Richie Cunningham?
Richie Cunningham.
There we go.
Ron Howard is her dad.
It is, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Director of the latest Star Wars film.
Yeah.
Han Solo.
And then you think to yourself, she was bound to get into this industry, wasn't she, really? How could you not?
She was. And it's good that she inherited her mom's looks, not her dad's, because I do think that's served her well.
I think she got her dad's hair, Jean. She got red hair.
It's true.
He's got red hair. Do you know they used to take her to set all the time? Everything they were ever filming, she was always on set.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's like the Coppolas.
Yeah.
As well.
But she wasn't allowed to be in a movie, I think, till she was 7.
Hmm. Did she get... Until she was 7.
No movies.
Great parental controls there, yeah.
You gotta hold off.
Did she get the assist with her career?
I mean, she must have. Yeah, she must have, mustn't she? But she plays Claire, obviously, in the movie, which I think she does fantastically well.
Yeah, and I do think here... one of my biggest problems, actually, probably my biggest problem with the last film, is that the original Jurassic Park has characters. They're actual... They feel like people. Every single one of them is incredibly memorable. They've got very unique characteristics. In the first film, it felt like we had action figures, not characters. She's the, you know... boss who's, you know, not going to take any man's answer for anything, who's going to run around in heels and, you know, be very pushy and, you know, forceful and, you know, that kind of spark plug of a woman. And it just felt like somebody drew her as a stick figure. The exact same thing for Chris Pratt's character. None of them felt really developed. Most of the movie was them running around and having, you know, classic forced movie tension between them. And here I do think that they do more of a job in developing them. She is now an activist who's trying to save the dinosaurs after the dinosaurs tried to kill her. Chris Pratt is off building a cabin in the woods, and they have to find their way back and find their way back maybe to each other, question mark. And so a lot of, I still don't feel like they're real characters, and I don't think that you're ever going to get anything close to Ian Malcolm or Alan Grant or Laura Dern's character, whose name is escaping me right now. But I do think that they are at least a bit more three-dimensional in this film.
Well, Bryce Howard really wanted this part, Bryce Dallas Howard. And I found a little bit of her dad, Ron Howard, talking about how much she wanted it when she went for the role. She was turning other stuff down.
It's every parent's greatest thrill. And so for my wife, Cheryl, and I to see Bryce succeeding in an occupation that she loves is incredibly gratifying. Mm-hmm. I once told her, when Jurassic World was maybe going to happen, maybe not, and she was waiting for it because she loved the director so much and she loved the part, she was offered another very interesting project, and I said she should take the other project because, you know, who knows about Jurassic World. And she said, no, I'm going to wait. And I said, well, I hope you're right about that. And boy, was she was right. But, you know, she has great, great instincts. She came and watched early cuts of In the Heart of the Sea and had great creative ideas to contribute. So I'm lucky. It's a very close family and a very creative family.
She must have been really sure she was going to get the role, to be saying no to other stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they probably wanted her. They wanted someone like her. I do think that Bryce Dallas Howard at this point has enough big films under her belt to be able to pick and choose.
You said they might want someone like her. I wonder if Jessica Chastain also auditioned for the role. Because then it would have been a difficult choice, wouldn't it?
I'm very glad she did not. She makes good movies.
Oh, ouch.
Not too much?
William. Yeah. Although the last movie she was in, which was at Diff, you slated, I happen to remember. Mark loved it. And you hated it.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
What was the movie?
Miss Sloane. Another cardboard cutout of a feminist who's not going to take any guff from anyone. It was just, you know, painfully forced in that angle.
Did you know, though, that Bryce Dallas Howard and Jessica Chastain, they went to school together and they used to get confused for each other all the time. They still do. And I love this. Bryce, someone else made a song, actually. It wasn't Bryce who made it. Someone made a song called I Am Not Jessica Chastain. But then Bryce Dallas Howard sang the song and put her vocals to the video. It's brilliant. Take a little listen to this.
Everything was going so well. This just isn't fair. I was here first. The world's fallen under a spell of a girl with red hair. It's as though I've been cursed. I apologize for breaking the illusion, but it's time I put an end to the confusion. I am not Jessica Chastain. I'm the one from Lady in the Water. For Christ's sake, I am Ron Howard's daughter. So behold this sad refrain. Up to Jessica instead, and you can tell her, see her face and know my pain. Jessica Chastain. Everywhere I go, I hear them whispering, wondering, isn't that her? Yes, that's Jessica Chastain. We were both in The Help, yes, but who did I play? You don't know, it's a blur, thanks to Jessica Chastain. All the critics once considered me a highlight.
Goes on for a lot longer than that. It's brilliant, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's heartfelt.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
So good. It's really good. But then Jessica Chastain was asked about this song on the red carpet, and her answer surprised me.
Bryce Dallas Howard did the I Am Not Jessica Chastain video. Did you know that she was doing that before it came out? And will there be any kind of a response video from you?
How do you think it came out? It was on my Instagram.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yes. She emailed me the video, and she said, oh my God, this is hysterical, the whole thing. And I said, this is hysterical. And then she emailed me her doing it, and she goes, why don't you post this? And I was like, all right. So that's how we did it. That's us addressing those that were the same person rumor. Yes. So clearly now we're not. But I'm sure I just confused everyone by me posting Bryce Dallas Howard singing it.
I love it. So they're both in on it. It's cute.
Do you think they look alike?
No, I think they both just got red hair.
You have red hair.
I know.
You could be the third doppelganger.
I wish I could look like Jessica Chastain.
Gotta give you bangs. That's the key.
Do you think they look similar?
I see it. I do.
Really? I don't see it at all. Let us know what you think about this film if you've seen it already. A few of you have. And we're also talking about the movie cinemas that you like the best. We've had a few of those coming in. And whether we should bring in a new rule where we say no prequels and no sequels. Tola says a movie should get one sequel and that's it. Once it gets to prequel territory, I switch off.
Yeah, I think writers are the only people who care about prequels. When you're writing something, you work on all that backstory in your head and you feel it's more interesting than it actually is when it doesn't need to be told. I do think that's why George Lucas is the only person that really thought prequels needed to happen. It's a really painful writer trick, I think.
What about, we had another suggestion here, a prequel to Scarface. What would happen in that, William?
I would not like a sequel to Scarface. I think they covered that movie pretty well. I do think there are other De Palma films that I would like a sequel to, for sure.
Like what?
Why not another Dress to Kill? Let's see what, you know, cross-dressing Michael Caine is doing 30 years later.
Hey, back to Jurassic World, actually, just before we start talking about the other movies that are out this week, because there's a couple, although they're not new. They're old, but they're new. Anyway, we'll get into that. The stars of Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard, they talked a little bit about their characters evolving, which is what you talked about earlier, William, since their 2015 film, a Jurassic World trilogy. Take a little listen to what they said.
Our relationship has evolved. It's slightly more complicated. They had opposite reactions to how to handle the trauma of the events of the first film. She wants to really lean into it and try to do everything she can to save the animals, to right what's wrong. And I think my character believes that you can't right what's wrong and it's best to just go live your life and run away from it a little bit. And that's a lesson he has to learn through the course of this film, and he learns it from Claire.
So in this movie, in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, there's this extinction level event that's happening on the island. There's a previously dormant volcano that's on the verge of eruption and will wipe out all of the dinosaurs if they're not taken off the island and relocated. And so that's something that my character is incredibly passionate about. I mean, she's someone who, in the first Jurassic World, she was a C-level executive, and she was somebody who really, she cared more about the bottom line than these animals. And she went through a huge, huge journey in that first film, and so now she's realized what she needs to do.
Shall we spend our 35 dirhams here this week? For me, it's the only place to spend it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think this movie does deliver a much more enjoyable film, much more watchable film than the last one we saw that left such a bad taste in my mouth and a lot of other people's mouths. I do think that if you have sequel fatigue and franchise fatigue and you're sick of people walking into rooms and having, you know, sort of generated quotes like, you've got to be kidding me. It's like, then maybe stay home and watch something on Netflix. But if you can bear with terrible lines like that, then by all means, see Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
Okay, we are going to talk about a couple of movies when we come back. We've got a horror movie and we've got a This Actually Happened movie too.
Real time. Real time.
Talking about the movies, now there's a couple of movies that have come out this weekend that actually came out well before this. For instance, the first one we're going to talk about, Abattoir. This was released in Russia in 2016 for the very first time. A horror movie released in Russia in 2016. Why are we just getting it now, William?
I mean, there's a lot of reasons why this happens. A distributor may buy the rights to a film, maybe a movie that hasn't even come out yet. A lot of times these movies will be bought when they're still just scripts, but they sign an agreement that they will eventually release it, but then the movie comes out and it doesn't do well anywhere else, and so they eventually just release it when it's cheapest and easiest and might actually get a few people to go see it on a not busy weekend.
Doesn't bode well, does it?
I mean, you never know. Sometimes these movies might be fine. I do think this sounds like the kind of movie that you would enjoy, Steph.
No, you see, it's really funny because Sonal doesn't like horror movies and she was watching the trailer earlier. She felt the same as me, like, this is not scary.
Yeah, I heard from the reviews that I've seen, it's a very ineffective horror movie, which is sad.
Should we take a little listen at the beginning of the trailer to get an idea of this? Because the minute they start to explain the story, I think everyone listening will do the same thing that we did and go, huh?
Do 10 years before I took over the ownership, there was a nasty home invasion.
Let's go!
A husband and wife killed.
In your house?
More specifically, in the hallway.
And the hallway was gone.
So they've gotten rid of the hallway in the house.
Spooky.
Who cares? You know what I mean? They've redesigned the house. That is not spooky in the slightest.
Well, I think that the conceit here that a guy is building a haunted house based on the rooms of other houses in which terrible things has happened sounds better than the trailer makes it describe. I think that could be a good movie on paper.
Is that what this movie is?
That's what this movie is.
I thought this movie was about that house where the corridor's missing.
That's a terrible trailer.
It's a terrible trailer, because that's what I got from the trailer. So what you've just described does sound a little bit better.
Right?
That sounds like... Am I going to be scared by this movie?
I don't think so, but it's still, I think it might be a staff movie.
Ah, well, the director of the film, Darren Lynn Bousman, he directed a few of the Saw movies, didn't he, which I love.
Yeah, he did 2 through 4. So he's not, you know, a James Wan savant who can do any type of movie. I don't think that the Saw movies were ever scary. Were they ever scary?
Yeah, I thought they were scary.
Why were they scary?
The idea of putting yourself in the position of the person who was attached to the radiator, knowing what you had to do to get away from there, was scary to me.
So was it the anticipation that was scary, or was it just gross out? Because it just felt like a gross out sort of film.
It was the, oh my gosh, I don't know what I would do.
Okay. Well, what would you do if you were in a house and it was also a Frankenstein house in which other houses were put together to make an even super scary house?
I'll have a little think about it whilst Darren Lynn Bousman explains the movie some more.
Abattoir is the story of a man named Jebediah Crone who travels the world buying crime scenes. And so anytime there's a tragedy in a place, someone commits suicide in a bathtub, a house fire, a home invasion, he buys the house and rips out the crime scene. And we follow Jebediah Crone and we begin to realize that he is building a house of his own made up entirely of crime scenes. That's kind of the high concept pitch. It's actually a story about a girl by the name of Jules Talbin whose sister was brutally murdered, and before she can deal with the grief, the room which her sister was murdered in was ripped out of the house, and she begins an investigation to uncover the legend and lore of Jebediah Crone, and she uncovers the fact that he's been doing this for years, collecting crime scenes, and she goes on an investigation to find out why he's doing this.
Oh my gosh, I'm so in. Do you think he cleans them up first, or are they how they were left?
I think the stench has got to be part of it.
This is a great movie. This is a great horror movie. I can't wait to go and see this. And I'm really upset that I've had to wait since 2016 to see it.
Seriously.
One more for you. Now, this one was out, I think, 2017 for the first time. We're just getting it now. Last Rampage.
Well, it's come out different places at different times, because with indie movies, that will happen sometimes as well. But this one is also based on a true story of a man who named Gary Tilson, who escaped from prison in a dash for freedom, as well as, you know, people who were helping him get along and killing people along the way. And so it is kind of a thriller. I wouldn't say this is a straight-out horror film, but definitely a true-to-life thriller starring, I think, an underrated actor in Robert Patrick, who we've seen in the later seasons of The X-Files, as T-1000 in Terminator 2, and again here in The Last Rampage.
Do you know what puts me off a little bit, and I'm not sure whether it should or not? Men on horseback. I don't like men on horseback.
Just all of them?
All of them.
So you're not watching Westworld then?
No. Oh, yes. Love Westworld.
So if they're robot horses, it's fine.
You got me.
That's it. Okay. That's the secret.
So here is the director, Dwight Little. He's explaining how he first learned about Gary Tilson's story.
The inspiration for this topic for me was that my stepson is an actor. And he was a pretty well-known child actor. And he was brought this book to play the character of Donnie when he was younger. And so the movie didn't come together, but he always remembered it and went on. He's an older actor now, not Donnie's age. And he brought me the book and said, you know, this would be a really interesting film. And I said, oh, Jason, what are you talking about? He said, no, just read it. So I read this book, Last Rampage by James Clark, and I was stunned because I didn't know this story. I didn't know anything like this had ever happened. three teenage boys break their convict father out of prison and go on a killing spree with the help of their mother. It's like a log line from a TV show that you'd think, no, you know, because you couldn't really believe it if it hadn't happened.
All right, so we've got three good movies, I think, this weekend that we can go and see, can't we?
We do.
Abattoir, Last Rampage, which now the name completely does what it says on the tin after hearing that, and also Jurassic World.
Mm-hmm. And there are things coming up next week as well.
It's a good job it's hot outside. Now, when it comes to next week, we're going to have an interview, but you're going to be doing something on the Wednesday before we talk about films on the Thursday.
Yeah, so we can talk about it. We'll hear all about it next week, but you guys can come along. Just say that you are Dubai Eye listeners, and you can come at City Walk next Wednesday night at 9 p.m. I'm going to be sitting down with the son of the famed director, Mustafa Akkad, Malik Akkad, his son, about the famed film The Message, which came out in 1976 to controversy and acclaim, telling the story of the times of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And it was a gigantic epic, 3.5 hours long. It's an incredibly famous and acclaimed film. They've remastered it in 4K, so we're going to hear all the behind-the-scenes stories from his son and what it was like, you know, growing up with the legacy of this film and how he's put that back together, as well with a documentary called The Messenger.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. And then we'll have an interview with Malik on the radio next Thursday, so be here for that. Your question, someone did send one in for Claire Foy when you go and see her in Barcelona next week. Christian said, you need to ask her about the Queen. So far, it's been a real blessing. Does she think that it will ever turn into a curse?
We'll see. We'll see how the girl who kicked the spider's web does, and then maybe we'll answer that question.
William, thank you as always. We'll see you next week.
See you next week. Real
time. There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.